Monster Man, Patreon bonus episode, The Folk of the Fairy Kingdom.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
This is a patron-only bonus episode of Monster Man, so if you're hearing this, thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. I try to put out bonus episodes that go to patron supporters at all levels, but this year I've kind of been slacking, and so now that I have some free time, I'm going to try and catch up, so look for a couple more episodes to come in the near future. I didn't have a theme for my episodes like my my earlier ones on the Chaos Gods, so that was part of what was kind of delaying me. I wasn't really sure what to talk about, so I've decided to go back to my stack of old Dragon magazines and take a look at some of the monster-related articles in there. I'm trying out a new microphone. I'm recording this on my phone rather than on my PC in preparation for traveling a little bit over the next few months, so I'm hoping to set up a mobile recording setup that, while I won't be able to come up with the kind of quality that I usually have, at least will be okay to listen to. So let me know in the comments what you think about the sound of this episode. I'm also not going to be editing this one as much, so you're going to hear, you're going to hear a few more ums and hesitations in my recording. This is kind of an informal test episode. It's just me, a cup of coffee, and Pepper the dog having a nap. And a copy of Dragon Magazine number 155, that's the UK edition, from 1990. And this is a very monster-rich magazine. It's all about elves and other fairy creatures. There's articles in here about satyrs and Gruagach, and I'm very pleased with the Gruagach article, if for no other reason than it has a full-page Janet Elizio illustration, and you know I like some Janet Elizio. Anyway, this article that I want to talk about today is called The Folk of the Fairy Kingdom, and it's by Vince Garcia with art by Robert Klasnick, or Klasnich. This is a very interesting article, and it actually kind of gives the lie to something that I regularly say on Monster Man, because one thing that you'll hear me say often is that the authors of the monster books kind of use the hardbacks to fix issues, but they can only do so additively because you can't run a hot fix on a hardback. But insofar as you can, of course, the method by which TSR would do this was using Dragon Magazine. Dragon was always publishing supplemental material for AD&D, and that includes new monsters and, as is mainly the case in this article, updates to old monsters. I'll start by reading part of the intro by Vince Garcia, because I feel like this sets out the stall pretty clearly, and also kind of makes me feel vindicated in something that I've been saying on the podcast, which is that there are a lot of these, like, fairy creatures in AD&D, and not a lot to do with them. This article, like every article in Dragon Magazine, suffers, I don't know if it's the heavy editorial hand of Roger Moore, or just people trying to imitate the kind of Gygaxian diction and not being so successful with the stodgy, tiresome TSR house style. Still, I think it makes some very good points. Some of the most fascinating creatures within the AD&D Register Trademark game include the diminutive and magical fairy folk, and while their place within any number of outdoor adventures should be guaranteed, fairies rarely appear in campaigns. One reason, perhaps, is that the fairy folk do not lend themselves easily to adversarial encounters. Orcs, ogres, dragons, and the like are easily cast in such roles, but the reclusive fairies require more thought on their handling. To offer the DM a few ideas on making greater use of these creatures, a brief ecology of each type of fairy follows, along with an idea on how it might be encountered in the travels of an adventuring party. Abbreviations used in each brief ecology are FF, Fiend Folio Register Trademark Tome, MM, Monster Manual, MM2, Monster Manual 2. The AD&D 2nd Edition Monsters Compendium was produced after this article was written, but it may be consulted for details. Fairies don't get used in campaigns very much because they usually don't create conflict. What did I tell you? And one thing that I find is interesting about this is that the monsters here are actually being expanded and revised to a certain extent. There is new content here, but this article is phrasing itself as if it were just explaining how to use the existing monsters. But actually, in many of the entries, the monster is quite significantly elaborated on compared to its original description in the book it came from. So that's interesting to me. Like, there's sort of like, oh, well, I'll show you how to do it. And then it gives you something that's actually easier to use. So this article covers 18 monsters, 18 fairy creatures. And obviously, I'm not going to go into all of them, but it covers the Atomy, the Boggart, the Buka, the Brownie, the Bacon, the Dryad, the Fairy Dragon, the Grey Elf, the Grig, the Calmulus, the Corda, the Leprechaun, the Pixie, the Quickling, the Satyr, the Sprite, the Swan May, the Sylph. And then it introduces a new deity, the Fairy Queen Rhiannon. So pretty substantial. Each entry, and I like this, each entry is followed by a little setup section that describes a way in which a party of adventurers might encounter the creatures. I said I like this idea, and I meant it. I like this idea. The actual setups leave something to be desired. So for example, here's the setup for the Atomies. On the first leg of a trek into the mountains to find the lair of a green dragon, the adventurers make camp in a small meadow as dusk approaches. As dinner is prepared and night falls, the party is set upon by a voracious horde of stinging, biting insects that chase off the horses, which were believed to be securely staked down, then turn on the PCs, possibly causing the group to abandon equipment which is not to be found upon later search as it retreats to safety and seeks the recovery of the steeds. If I were a AD&D player and I had been in a campaign long enough that my party was realistically, like, that they have chosen to go take on a green dragon, or at least run the risk of taking on a green dragon, and I had to make my way through this encounter where what happens is you get stung by a horsefly and then you basically get pickpocketed, I think I would find that frustrating. I do not think I would find that compatible with my dignity. I would be annoyed at a bunch of time-wasting rigmarole with no stakes and no conflict. But the more serious problem with this setup is that this is also essentially the setup for the Bacon. Like, the Bacon uses dancing lights to distract you, and then it goes through your stuff. The Grig, where the Grigs use ventriloquism to distract you, and then they steal your dinner. The Leprechaun, where a leprechaun starts a conversation with you and then tries to rob you. The Pixie, where the Pixies use illusions to distract you and then steal your stuff. The Satyr, where the Satyrs lull you to sleep and then steal your stuff. So, as you can see, there's not a lot of variety there. There's also a couple where, like, people report that their house is haunted, but it merely turns out to be, you know, mischievous fairy types. And there's a couple where, like, the person is nice and friendly. So, for example, the Swan May just turns up and tells you that there are some orcs causing trouble nearby. Fair enough. That's a normal adventure setup, but what if the person was a Swan May? Again, not that there's anything wrong with that. Now, there are some changes to the monsters themselves. So, for example, boggarts get a much more detailed sort of ecology, like how they progress from being boggarts to being will-o'-the-wisps, which says the boggarts are immature will-o'-the-wisps. We knew that. This just says that they're evil bacons who, when they die, kind of gradually go from being like the ghost of a bacon to being a will-o'-the-wisp. And their motivation is that they want to sort of drain your life force in order to achieve that transformation. And this is the first time that we've seen anything like motivation for the boggarts. So that's interesting. Dryad's another one as well. So the dryad in the monster manual is quite bare bones compared to some later monsters. And they really have really gone into more detail here. And I think there's one particularly nice thing, which is, as we know, dryads are kind of lustful and romantic, right? The idea that they are on the lookout for handsome male characters to bewitch is, okay, you know, a limited old-fashioned worldview, but you could extend the principle. That's no problem. But it's a really interesting idea that, so this frequently happens to, like, rangers and druids. You know, people who spend a lot of time in the woods, if they're good-looking, a dryad will fall in love with them. And then they'll enchant this person, but then once the enchantment ends, that person will have this kind of, like, intimate knowledge of the woods, fnar-fnar, and will, from that point onward, kind of have a connection to that dryad. So there, I think that's a really interesting idea. They even talk about the idea that, like, the dryad from a character's past might kind of call on them for aid if something threatens the forest. So I think that's a really interesting, you know, like a very simple NPC calls for help mission setup gets an interesting complication if the NPC calling for help is your ex, and an even more interesting complication if that relationship is kind of ambiguous, magical, not wholly of your own choosing, that kind of thing. Anyway, so I feel like there are, and as you go through this, I feel like there's a lot of the author can't acknowledge these monsters were boring, so I have tried to make them more fun. But also, the fact that so many of the entries are similar illuminates the underlying problem, which is that there's no reason to have some of these things as distinct from each other. There are so many, like, little magical trick-playing creatures that you're not really going to use more than one. Nonetheless, this is a big improvement on previous versions of these fairy creatures, and I think a really interesting look at what TSR perceived to be the problems with their monster roster. Now, in our next episode, we're going to take a look at the rest of this article and the entry on Rhiann and the Fairy Queen, and then if we have time, we'll take a look at some of the other fairy folk articles in Dragon 155. So once again, thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.